This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Welcome to the In Focus podcast. My name is Jayant Sriram, and I'm your host for today's episode. Today, we take a detailed look at the bird flu outbreak in India, look at how serious it is, and how it can be contained. So here's the story so far. Avian influenza, popularly known as bird flu, has been reported from Kerala, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, Himachal Pradesh, Haryana, Gujarat, and Uttar Pradesh in recent weeks. During the first week of January, reports of unusual deaths of a large number of birds, including wild ones, started coming in from many states, indicating that the virus is being actively transmitted among various bird groups. So what causes bird flu and how does it spread? What is its impact on birds? And what is the kind of threat it can pose to human beings? Crucially, how does one come up with strategies to contain it? Those are the questions we'll take up today, and I'm joined by The Hindu's Senior Associate Editor, G. Anantakrishnan. So the first question to ask is, how serious is this outbreak of bird flu, avian flu in India, and which are the states that have been affected so far, and how widespread is this?
Yeah, thanks, Sriram. Actually, this particular outbreak has been quite serious, I would think, because it's spreading from the initial base of about four states to many more now. For instance, initially you had Kerala, then Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, and Himachal, and then you've added on now Haryana, Gujarat, Maharashtra, and Uttar Pradesh more recently. So you are finding birds of different kinds, wild birds, birds which are not domestic but yet found in the normal environment, like crows and so on. And of course, poultry and aquatic birds which people keep for agriculture. All these birds are affected now. This is actually what we are seeing is a wave of bird flu infections that have been happening since the big wave in 2005-06. So you find that this is again a major challenge this year, and we have not yet seen the last of it. So the culling operations are still on. So I suppose we'll have to watch how it goes from here, because this is also the migration season for the birds. So I think maybe we have seen the worst of it, but I guess it will still recur.
Right. So, this outbreak in India, is it part of a kind of a global outbreak? Is it in different geographic regions that we also see this outbreak of avian flu?
Yeah, so the latest update on what they call the highly pathogenic avian influenza, which is the severe form of bird flu,
right,
which has been tracked for December by the World Animal Health Information System. So basically, this one keeps track of what's happening around the world. And what they've identified is several countries where the outbreak has been noticed, in the last, month or two, which would be, including Taiwan, Iran, Israel, Japan, South Korea, and Vietnam, European Union countries, almost a dozen of them. Then you have Ukraine, Russia, and the UK. So it's quite a widespread spread this time, and according to this organization, there have been sort of 4.8 million birds who were affected as of December. So when you say affected, it just means that those birds can't survive. Either they die on their own or they have to be removed.
Right. So let's just split this up into two vital questions. The first would be, how serious is avian flu for bird health?
The major types of bird flu, if you take the viruses that they have identified so far, H5N1 and H5N8, which we have seen here and which are pretty much very common elsewhere as well, apart from of course other variants which include H5N2, H5N8, H7N8, and so on, and there's also this somewhat less common H7N9 So these strains actually are very serious for birds, because from what one can see, the prospect of birds overcoming the infection, you know, once they have it, is very low. So you have these mass deaths of birds, which we have seen in many places, like ducks in Kerala and, you know, other places. So these are indicators of how it is a severe infection. So you can actually see that it spreads very quickly from the saliva of the birds, from the droppings of the birds. So when you have a captive, you know, stock of a large number of birds, what you're talking about is a mass infection which quickly spreads. So there is very little chance that, you know, the birds may escape. So this is actually, even from economic perspective and from the perspective of the bird health, is a very serious issue. So basically, the moment there is an outbreak, one has to try and contain it. So that is pretty much the defense that people have. They basically cull all the birds in that particular, you know, ground zero, if you can call it that, and then, you know, a radius of, let's say, a kilometer or so. So around, all the birds, the captive birds, are removed. So this has been now initiated in several states. And in terms of the economics, this is, you know, it's really severe for the farmer, because he might lose his entire, you know, birds that he has raised over a time. And he has to depend on a sort of small compensation that, you know, the government gives. So it is indeed a serious threat to poultry and aquatic farming. Yes.
Right. And so does this affect all birds, or some birds more in particular? Or is it, like you said, just birds that are kept together in large clusters that are in more danger?
What we can see is that the interactions between wild birds and domestic birds, right, wherever they occur, like, for instance, the birds might be coming from distant places. But what one can see, what one reads in the literature, is that these birds don't sort of carry the virus for a very long distance as they migrate. It is just that wherever they are resting on their route, they come into contact with the virus somewhere, and then they develop the infection, and they perish, you know, soon thereafter. But the places where they subsequently go, it's either, you know, resting again, or, you know, falling and dying. So there, if there are other domestic birds, these, you know, migratory wild birds, they basically bring that infection to a newer territory. So this is you know, in some, the way that this thing spreads. But as we have spoken, if you have a large number of, let's say, a poultry farm with, you know, thousands of birds, so then quickly it spreads among those birds, and then it might spread in the environment. And there is, of course, the threat to human health as well, which we can prospectively discuss, from a couple of strains, known strains of this virus, and the fear that, you know, humans might actually face, you know, much more severe, you know, effect of these viruses in the future if they mutate.
Right. No, that's a vital question, which we'll, of course, discuss just subsequently. But just to clarify again, basically the carrier in this case is a wild bird, and the wild bird basically comes in contact with, when the wild bird comes in contact with, you know, a large cluster of other birds, say kept in large clusters for poultry farming, etc. That's where this kind of mass spread happens. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct. So the source should be from some bird which is exotic to that infection site. So one might imagine that, you know, it is predominantly a wild bird, because those are the birds that are exotic to that place. And, you know, the domestic birds until then had no signs of disease. So when you make that connection, you know, the finger is pointed at a foreign source. So which is not to say that, you know, wild birds are in some way responsible for, you know, infecting these, you know, domestic birds, the birds of economic importance locally. It's just that they have picked it up along the way, and quite hapless in that sense. And right, there is the other issue, that if you try to eliminate wild birds, then what you're doing is you are basically dispersing the virus into newer territories, because these birds would then flee from wherever they are and go to some nearby territory, and they would end up infecting fresh birds in that area as well. So the integrity of maintaining the you know, the wildlife ecosystem is more important, if you and the segregation of the domestic birds from the wild ones. So this is basically, so as you correctly said, you know, it is indeed appearing to come from the wild bird and spreading to the domestic birds.
Right. So let's just come now to the question that we discussed earlier, which is, does bird flu pose a threat to human beings and how serious can this threat be?
So indeed, there is a threat to human health, Jayant. It's right. Just that, you know, we have had infections reported from H5N1, which is the most common kind of infection that's been reported, and then H7N9 and H9N2 variants of the virus. So less common is, you know, H7N9 and H9N2. H5N1 by now is well known because there have been mass infections in East Asia in the past. And so you are basically, the fear is that currently the position is such that you don't have very fast, efficient human-to-human transmission of the virus. That is generally the belief. Now, if you see some of these viruses, they might have a mutation in the way that they transfer. And so the transmission among humans, it might lead to a situation where it gets very fast, and then it would create a kind of a fear that particularly feels resonant now in the wake of COVID-19, that you might be looking at a virus which is much more lethal, you know, based on the mortality data we see, that much more lethal than COVID-19 mortality rates. So when we look at that, what we see is that mutation, the change in the genetics, the way that they bind to receptors in our pathways, the human airway pathways, the way they actually change, that would pose a great risk to humans. So we have to try and contain these epidemics among birds and reduce the movement of people to these affected places. And basically, that's the protocol that we need to surveil all the time, see whether we are well up on what the state of the infection is, the genomic sequencing of the viruses that are already known. Now, it's interesting because they say that even from the 1918 pandemic, it was of an avian origin genes, set of genes of avian origin, which basically caused the infection of the H1N1 in that instance, according to the Centers for Disease Control in the US. H1N1 was responsible for that. So it's a kind of thing that happened with SARS earlier, and we later got COVID. So here people fear that if we don't really get our act together, then something might go wrong here as well. So there is a threat to human health.
Right. And have there been strains before of avian flu that have, had this, that have exhibited this potential to mutate and, increase transmissibility among humans in this fashion?
So it is not, there's no evidence that I think it is really mutated in a way that, fundamentally changes the way it works. So what they say is that, these viruses actually require receptors which are lower down in the lungs. So it's not so easy to transfer to another person. So that's exactly the point. So if they actually change the way they work with the other receptors, if they are able to find, some way to bind, then that might be a problem at that point. So currently the evidence seems to point low human-to-human transmission. Although, for instance, WHO, it says that since 2003, there have been 862 confirmed cases of H5N1 and 455 deaths in 17 countries. So it sort of gives you an idea that, this is not to be sort of taken lightly, although the transmission may, be slow at this point. And basically, it all boils down to this question of how you're going to deal with the wild environment and prevent the interactions between domestic birds and wild birds, so which means maintaining habitat integrity. So I would like to touch on the British approach to this. They have said that the farmers are by law required to ensure that all the domestic birds are kept within nets during this current pandemic. those which are not affected. So those which are affected, naturally, they'll be removed. So just to prevent that from happening, they are saying that, you know, there's this protocol to be followed and, you know, how you want to minimize the risk of transmission from one set of birds to another in the farming context. So, yeah. So basically, that's what we can do at this time.
So, yeah, I was going to get to mitigation measures. So one thing that you're pointing out is that putting the non-affected birds within netted environments is a good way to start, right?
That's correct, yeah. So that it is part of the biosecurity measures that are normally introduced by governments. So basically, they prevent the wild birds from getting very close to or contacting in some way, you know, connecting with the domestic birds. So that will help to physically act as a barrier. And in the case of aquatic birds, it is also particularly important because wild birds and domestic birds which are aquatic might use the same space, a water body. So that is something that you need to particularly watch out for. And these are basically then the farm protocols are there. What do you do when you work on a farm? So all the vehicles have to be disinfected, and then you have to disinfect your footwear, and then you have to ensure that you don't visit production areas too often, more than necessary, because you end up carrying the virus based on the animal products to other areas of the farm. If there is a problem, you end up carrying it to other areas. So basically, the protection comes from this kind of biosecurity prevention. So that's the only way you can prevent it. But once you have an infection, the only option open to you is containment, in which case you have to cull the affected birds and then restock that particular farm with new birds. So in India, there's some law which requires periodic surveillance, and this is not something that gets wide public attention. So we really don't know how efficiently this is happening in terms of the use of the law, which is the Prevention and Control of Infectious and Contagious Diseases in Animals Act, dating back to 2009. So basically, the way that we handle all this is important. And I'd also like to say that in Indian context, many of the farmers live close to natural environments where the birds are, domestic birds, kept birds are free to move. So that actually raises the prospect. Like in Kerala, for instance, why is it that ducks get affected? It's very likely because of the cohabitation, so to say, about the wild birds and the domestic birds in the same space.
Right. So there needs to be a clear boundary between these two environments. That's another thing that can be done for safety, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So demarcation of farms and, helping farmers to maintain biosecurity measures right. has to be the, guiding policy in mitigating the threat of bird flu in future years, because as we know, it is a big sector in India. Valued very highly, worth an estimated 80,000 crores in a year, and with about 500 odd crores in exports. So poultry is a big industry. So we can't afford small farmers who make up about let's say 20% of the total. We can't afford to let them suffer because of every other year or every year to have a sort of outbreak somewhere or the other would seriously jeopardize their prospects. So I think we need to factor that into the policy. The government is very keen to do that based on what they are saying in their action plan for the poultry industry. But we really have to get down to it.
And what's the, and just speaking about the poultry industry and the poultry markets, of course, bird flu creates a scare and people stop buying poultry products. Is there a danger of buying poultry products at this point in time?
The advice that we have seen is that, which is also common sense advice, is that you don't eat things which are not cooked well. So right. Typically, that is, of course, the psychological barrier that if there is a problem somewhere, then you wouldn't want to consume that particular product. So, which is, of course, you know, the natural sort of protective reaction that people have. But what we have seen so far is that the official advice is about eating things which are well cooked. And it's always helpful to keep track of what the government is saying about this particular aspect, about the safety of food from time to time. And, you know, not take an extreme view of it this way or that. So I think the important thing is for us to ensure that poultry in particular, whether it's, you know, eggs or meat, is really well cooked. So that's the, I mean, that's what I would think is the rational way of looking at it.
Right. And so just to end, there's, you've done an explainer in this for the paper, which we link to in the podcast. And there's one question that that's really interesting. You know, why does why do we keep having these recurrences of bird flu, and do, you know, past major outbreaks not help form preventive strategies? So why do we keep going through this cycle?
There is no real way of getting rid of viruses, because the reservoir of infection is so wide that you cannot get rid of viruses in toto. So there will always be birds which are migrating, and you know, which will be coming, and they might pick it up on the way. It is neither feasible nor desirable to eliminate you know, birds out of fear that they'll be spreading this infection. So the rational thing to do would be to you know, protect against it, but you know, recurrence is something that you cannot avoid. And that's simply because the world is so large and it's got so much of, you know, it's just like any other virus. You cannot completely eliminate it, you know, maybe with the exception of, you know, something like, you know, pox. So, but then, you know, that might have taken a long time and it is done. But the people whom it affects matters most. In this case, it's a wide variety of birds. So there is no way you're going to completely rid the reservoir of infections. So this is bound to remain in the environment. And all we can do is to take security measures, biosecurity, surveillance, and, you know, preserve the integrity of the wild habitat so that wild birds which acquire this infection will not have any necessity to come into contact with the domestic birds in terms of food, feed, or, you know, water, which, you know, we provide to kept birds. So I think that is a key question. Recurrence will happen if we are careless. That's what I would think.
Right. So the biggest known outbreak of bird flu, I think, was in 2006, which happened in Asia. And, you know, as many as 258 cases, I think, in humans had been reported. So there was some talk of many countries coming together to sort of devise at least local strategies. Did that lead to anything by way of preventive measures?
So what they said in that particular meeting of different countries after the event is that they resolved to, you know, tackle the problem of avian influenza, highly pathogenic avian influenza, collectively. There is a resolve to do that, but the strategies should be formed by individual countries. So okay. This is not, there's no sort of global model or framework which they have advocated. So this is also closely aligned with agriculture and, you know, wildlife and, you know, natural environment preservation. So every country forms policy on that. In this case, they are, in terms of the prevention and containment, they have come up with that Delhi Declaration, which basically says that, you know, we resolve to handle this, but individual countries will form their own, you know, strategies, how to do it. That's what is the result of that particular initiative.
I think we'll wrap it up there. G. Anantakrishnan, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of the podcast, explaining this complex issue to us. And we'll see you again soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Jay.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.